right, and welcome along to the Golf Community, a beginner's journey where we talk all things golf and encourage participation and connection for new players. We cover golf clubs, golf balls, golf shoes, golf courses, coaching, tips, techniques, health, fitness, fun, friendship, events, and catch-ups. All right, so let's get into it. So today we welcome along Fraser Bond, who is the Director of Golf at Gulf Harbour Country Club and who started his career in golf through collecting golf balls for his grandfather. He is a full NZPGA member and has been working fully in golf since about 2012 and is the founder of Kiwi Golf Club with friends Peter and Cam. So let's welcome and talk to Fraser. All right, so thank you very much for joining us today, Fraser, out of your busy day.
Just thanks, Amy. Of course.
Just off the golf course from a driving lesson.
Just been giving a lesson out there in the blustering wind. Look like we've got a bit of rain on our way for us here at Gulf Harbour. So I think everyone's trying to get in a bit of golf and practice and then, get back home and get warm again.
Yeah. I'm actually hoping that I might be able to fit 9 holes in after this. So optimistic.
Yeah.
All right. So give us a little bit of background about your golfing journey.
It's pretty easy. I sort of was, my grandparents played golf. They're the only people who golfed in my family. They sort of got me started into playing a bit of golf. I kind of quit golf when I was about 14 because I got yelled at by an elder person at a golf course. So I was a bit over golf and then I thought it was a stupid sport for stupid old people. But by the time I got to like 19, I took golf back up again. I was actually working in the bar here at Gulf Harbour and I started playing with my friends. And then just really got like the bug for it, like so fast. And I was probably hitting balls every day, playing every day, working and then playing. I'd easily 18 holes a day plus a bit of practice and started helping out in the pro shop a little bit more. And then from there, I went, I'll do the traineeship and start a professional career. And I had quite a bit of interest in club management at the time and sort of the social side of golf, since that's how I kind of got back into it. So I didn't play a lot of amateur tournaments and such, and I kind of wish I did because golf's quite hard. And I worked it out, jumping straight into doing a bit more of a traineeship was a tough hurdle, but had some real good people around me, worked hard at it and got through. And then that was, by the time I was like 24, took on a director of golf role here at Gulf Harbour. Like I said, the management side was actually really important to me at that time. My initial plan was to actually jump on a cruise ship and try to be a golf pro on a cruise ship and travel around the world. But the opportunity here was like just so good that I had to take it. It's very hard to get one of these roles, a head pro or a director of golf role, because generally people fill them for years. So did that, worked under our old owner and then played golf, and here I am now, just a couple of months away from being 30. So the last 10 years have been golf packed and loaded and a bunch of fun to get to where I am now.
And that will explain, I jumped onto your LinkedIn profile and saw that you'd been at Gulf Harbour for 17 years and 10 months. And I was like, wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. I started, my grandparents have always taught me to like work for a bit of your life the entire time. I was never really given like heaps of sort of stuff. So when they took me out on the golf course, they weren't really prepared to pay for me to come and play golf with them. So they volunteered my services at Gulf Harbour, picking up balls on the driving range. And that's how I got onto the golf course to play with them and save them some money so they could probably spend it on a couple of glasses of wine. So good on them.
Days it was actually going out there picking up the golf balls on the driving range compared to the machines we've got these days.
Yeah. No, we had a pretty good machine here. I've seen, what is it now, 5 generations of range carts at Gulf Harbour. You know, that's my big history part. But yeah, it's much easier to do it now compared to back then. So yeah.
Nice. And so what's your biggest accolade, or you know, your biggest moment in golf?
Oh, there's just so many. it's real hard. I guess there's sort of some different times. Definitely like finishing the traineeship was a really big like moment, like to get through that, because it's quite tough, to a point of having to play and do the study and do the job and work at the same time. So you kind of sacrifice a bit of the social side, and you've got to actually practice like quite a lot to keep your ability up. But yeah, playing wise, there's nothing too much that stands out for me. Like, I'd love to actually, I mean, I'm still trying to win some sort of large sort of tournament in New Zealand. I'd love to actually have a good run at it, but you've got to put a lot of time and effort into to be a good player to get there. Before this lockdown, I was really practicing, and then we had a lockdown, so it was unfortunate, but we'll see how it goes for this summer. But I guess my big sort of achievement so far would actually be bringing the Charles Tour back to Gulf Harbour Country Club, or to Gulf Harbour Country Club for the first time, and running a proper 4-day event. That was a really big moment there, because like I remember being quite inspired when the New Zealand Open was here at Gulf Harbour, and just seeing like that tournament run and the people and the enjoyment, and like I said, had a bit of interest in management sort of side of things. So that was sort of a very big tick on my checklist last year. So that would be it.
Awesome. Yeah. And I guess it's just so inspiring when you can actually, you know, run an event like that and see how many people get the bug from it. I guess did you have a big uptake in membership after that?
Yeah, I think the Monday after the Sunday when Ryan Fox took the course to pieces, which was great to watch. I mean, phenomenal golf. But I think the Monday after that Sunday, the driving range was loaded end to end. Just everyone thinking, well, if he can shoot like 10 under here, why can't I?
Yeah.
I think they realized very hard that he didn't learn overnight how to play, but it was real cool, real good fun, and people are still talking about it now. We'd be only a few months away from hosting it, but unfortunately with all this lockdown stuff, we're still planning, we're still working through it, but we'll have another one. I think if we can do it bigger again, I'll be incredibly happy again. I think I'll get the same buzz, if not better, now knowing how it works.
Yeah, and I guess the second time with, you know, knowing all those hurdles that you've got to go through and getting back into it a second time, work out better. Hey, it's great to see Ryan Fox doing so well. Was it last weekend?
Yeah, the weekend just gone, one of his best finishes out over there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well done. Yeah, well done to him. I mean, I'm surprised. Like, he's so good and he's long enough off the tee. His short game's great. I mean, the travel must be hard. I guess that's probably one of the biggest factors. And I know he loves his fishing quite a lot, so maybe he misses out on that when he's playing overseas. But I feel he could be right there. He could see a big jump soon. You never know. But family life and stuff for him is important too, which I don't think it's important for everybody. So I guess that's also a part with the travel thing. Yeah, it's always – yeah, I hope he does really well. I want to really actually see him win something or take down something big on the European Tour. It would be great for golf in New Zealand and for him personally too.
Yeah, it's been great to see him. And I think Amelia Garvey is playing this weekend as well. So
yeah, qualified there. So that was great to see. Just having some Kiwis out there, and because like having Danny Lee, and then we had Lydia, which another big uptake. And I mean, that's great. But having like someone like Ryan probably relates a lot more to like quite a lot of younger guys out there who actually want to take up golf, you know, but in that age of sort of, like I said, I gave up sort of when I was like 14, but between the ages of 14 and 20, like golf's not a very fun sport. It's not a team sport. You play by yourself and it's hard. So
especially when it's a really important social time of your life, isn't it? And I mean,
yeah,
you know, you've got to commit so much to want to being.
Yeah. You want to just hang out with your mates, do kickflips on your skateboard. Like I was snowboarding at the time. With my friends, and we'd go to Snowpoint in the mountain. Like that was, yeah, golf was, yeah, couldn't imagine a worse thing to do at that time. But having someone, I guess, now to like look up to, I guess I'd probably actually play it a bit more. And now, as more clubs, I guess, have more dedicated junior programs and such to get on more tournament based stuff, you can kind of, you're practicing and you're playing to get better for an actual result. where there wasn't, might have been there when I was sort of that age, but I didn't feel like it was there. Like there's some people that did junior lessons, but you kind of just pushed to the back of the pack quite often. So.
Yeah, sure. So how long have you been coaching? I want to sort of talk about coaching and getting into coaching and women and golf. Mm-hmm. My passion is encouraging women participation. So how long have you been coaching?
So coaching, you can start coaching about first year into your traineeship. And you think you know everything, but you don't. I'm still learning now. I probably learn more now than what I've done over the last few years because you kind of can comprehend stuff more. But it'd be, what is that now? About eight years-ish. Been probably doing some coaching for and teaching people.
Nice. And I did see that you have put together a little training video that people can grab the golf fundamentals and learn the basics. That's still out there.
Yeah, quite a few people have done that course now. I think like over 1,000 people have completed that course on Udemy. It's had some pretty good results. I made that. That was actually the last year of my traineeship, I think. And I had a big, I still have now, like with online and sharing the golf information better with people. And that Udemy course was something I really enjoyed doing. And I've actually wrote out, I think like four others to do, like four other full courses, right. But it's just like going out there and recording them and putting them together. Takes a lot of time, but once you've done it, it's real cool. And I remember that when I finished in that training course, it was really nice to say to people, okay, do the training course, then come and see me for a lesson. And it works well for people's time management too. Then they can keep learning about golf and just break it down piece by piece, because golf's an incredibly steep learning curve, and it's the thing that I think stops people the most from actually like getting into golf and getting lessons. And you just feel so, I think sometimes people just feel so silly trying to pick it up, but it takes, you feel just so silly having to like learn all this stuff, and you feel like you should be able to do it, but you can't. And yeah, that skill acquisition is probably what the best way to like break it down is, that people just need to understand that when they start playing golf, that it's just going to take a long time, and you should judge yourself on year to year, not week to week or month to month. That's probably the biggest part, is think that, okay, I'm going to learn how to play golf, but I've got 10 years to do it, not 10 weeks.
Yeah, and I took a few lessons and I felt like I should be a pro. Right, I felt like I should be a pro, and I didn't know why I wasn't. I didn't have a handicap, and then I had a handicap, and I would just blow out every week. You know, and it's that mental game, isn't it? It's going, well, hang on a minute, you need to step back and go, well, if I can do this and practice on this for the first sort of few weeks, and just try and, you know, just be able to connect with the ball.
People want to really work out what they want to get out of golf. And there's some members and players that I know who are happy shooting like 90 every day of the week. And they probably will. They don't want to get better. They don't really care if they get worse. So give or take 10 shots, but they do it for the social side. And that's mint. That's what they do it for. That's cool. And then there's other players that do it for the scoring side, a bit more competitive. But if you're a beginner getting into golf and learning the game, you really just choose what you want to take on. Do you want to actually be a really good player? Sure, everyone wants to get a little bit better. But you're probably better off starting going, actually, this is a great time to spend time with my friends, my family, my partner, other people, my work colleagues or anything like that. And if I had a few terrible shots, that's okay. I'm going to keep doing it. And then if you enjoy the social side more, then the bad shots, I guess, aren't as effective on your mental game and how you proceed going forward. So, yeah.
There's a lot of people that do get involved, but so that they can spend more time with their partners or family. You know, a couple of people that I've interviewed have said, you know, it gives me great time with my dad.
Mm.
You know, taking that time to spend with him and a sport that he's enjoyed all these years. So what are the main differences between sort of coaching men and coaching women? What are those main differences that you'd find?
Wow, there's quite a lot. Guys don't listen I know women have been saying it for years, but I can definitely back that up. It's very funny.
We're going to make that go live.
That's going to be the reel that goes out, you know, about me. No, but you'll tell them a few things and they go, oh, yeah, but I think this is a better way to do it. And you're like, okay, but okay, well, I don't know why we're here sometimes. Yeah. But that's cool because you kind of go back and forth a little bit and the ladies, they're more like perfectionists. They want to know the exact way to do it versus what works probably better for their build or their physique that they've got. Because when I coach guys, like I'll say to some of the guys, be like, mate, you're a bit larger. You know, we should be working on a bit more this sort of an action. Or mate, you're a bit skinnier. Like this is the action you need to be working on here and trying to build a golf swing that works for their build. Mm-hmm. Where it's very hard, I guess, one, just to bring that up when you're doing women's golf, just to say, I don't know how many lessons I'd take if I led with, you know, you're a bit larger, we should do this. But so not like that, but it's just understanding that just because you see somebody swing it on TV or you've seen your friend swing it doesn't mean that's probably going to work exactly for you.
Yeah.
And the more the swings, especially I'd say in women's golf, in the club area of the golf course, like your club members, the swings are quite unique on how they hit it. Versus the tour, the swings are like perfect for the women's golf, where I think that's a bit of a flip. Like in the men's golf on the tour, they're all quite unique. And then like in the amateur golf, they're all kind of taught the same thing because most of the men can do sort of they're all built kind of roughly the same here or there. So I think it's just a mental like understanding of when you go into a lesson and learning, you're actually thinking that I just need to hit it good. I don't need to hit it like someone else who hits it good.
And I like the way that you sort of realize that, you know, everybody's different. And so, you know, and we've all got our aches and pains and things. So it actually needs to be adjusted to how best you can get out of that swing.
So there's a real good part. You can start, if you're maybe not quite a beginner, but you're starting getting into golf, if you actually go to your coach or someone you got to get lessons from and say, okay, what are your perfect coaching preferences that you like to see? And I know what mine are. Like, exactly, I like to see like the feet grounded, like to see like good turn of the chest, most pros do, but hands in front over here, not too much bowing in the wrist and onwards. I've got things that I love to see that I think work for a very, very good swing. However, if I'm coaching, I do the gentleman I just did a lesson with now, he doesn't have as much hip mobility as some people. So it's like, okay, let's hit a few shots where you get your front foot up off the ground and your backswing and then do that, which I would never teach straight away, get the front foot up off the ground until I've seen him hit a few shots. So even though I've got my perfect preferences that I like to see, that's not necessarily what I'll teach. And if you go to somebody, they might just be really good at teaching elder women how to play golf. Some pros would be really good at teaching elder gentlemen to play golf and so forth. Yes. So just spend some time to actually talk with your coach beforehand and understand what you want out of your game and then what they can deliver. Because there's definitely no way that one coach can coach everyone the best.
Yeah.
Just doesn't work out.
Yeah. And I guess that's another one of those questions. It's like, how do you pick the right coach?
Trial and error. It is. So here at Gulf Harbour, we've got Cam Jones, myself, Sean Bell, Ben Seely as my trainee, Dongwoo Kang, and then we've got a few other coaches around the area too. And quite a few of our members would have gone through a lesson with me, Dongwoo, Ben, Sean, Cam, and then gone back to one person that they probably had a better engagement with. And we don't look at that as competition. We look at that as, wait, no, that member is getting something that they feel they're connecting with. They feel that they're hitting it better working with that individual. Let them work with that individual. And all of our members just generally get better because of that, instead of us trying to fight each other for lessons because we think we're the better person.
Yeah. And it's all about the client and what the client needs, isn't it? And personality types too, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. My personality will definitely clash with some of the people that that I want, because I'm a bit like sort of free and easy about it, and some people get a bit down in the dumps and I'll probably laugh, which probably isn't the best thing to do. But when you hit a bad golf shot, what else is there to do? You can only laugh.
Well, yeah. You've got to learn to do that with a with those golf shots and just let them go, isn't it? It's all part of the mental game.
Yeah, yeah. Got to move forward and keep just trying to get better each time.
Yeah, yeah. So why don't you take us through maybe just a coaching session that you would do?
It sort of comes down. So I spend a lot of time, if I start with someone brand new, I probably won't say anything for maybe the first 15 minutes, sometimes sooner. But I like to really make sure I've got a good overview of how they swing it. And I'll ask a lot of questions. And I'll watch them top probably 10 balls in a row before I say anything or want to make a change, which makes it a bit awkward sometimes. But I don't want to say anything straight away that affects the way that they hit it. Because very often you have someone walk onto the driving range and they might flush it, absolutely hit it mint. And you go, well, why are you here? So kind of just spend a bit of time, take some notes and work my way through that. And then the thing I want to say, especially when I start with, I only want to have to say that once and we can grow from there. So I want to be really sure about the first thing I say. I don't want to say, oh, we need to work on this, then get maybe two or three lessons in and go, oh, actually, you know, because you've done that, we're going to have to change everything. You know, so taking your time and spending get some really good details on how that person hits it. Then I'll sort of ask them more about their scoring, if they have been playing golf. Same thing, what they want to get out of their golf, what they're trying to achieve. A relative time frame for that as well. Like somebody comes and it's happened many times where someone will come and send me a lesson a week before Club Champs. That's not going to work, unfortunately. Yeah, I want to win Club Champs next week. So a relative time frame. And that first lesson is just all for me, like just data collection or information gathering. And then I'll go away and I'll write my own notes and send them an email and create a bit of a plan. I don't really do any lessons with anybody that is a one-off lesson. I do offer it because that suits some people. They're happy with that. But it's just a 20-minute lesson and, you know, body position. And all I'm teaching is, I guess, my preferences, so hands and whatever, which might not work for them.
Sure.
But everyone else, I would say, look, here's the information I've got from your first lesson. And most of the time, I'll just do those for free. Just have a look. Here's a 5-week plan or a 10-week plan, or this is what we're going to do. And we'll work through that process there. So you know that, okay, I'm going to be terrible for the first 3 weeks because we're going to break your swing down and teach you a lot. But then from there, you might build up so we can actually see that progress. So, as long as people have a good plan like that, that's all I do. So it's hard to break down just what I do in one lesson. It's that as a first lesson, that's how I do it.
Yeah, but I think that's really great that you can take that lesson, have a good look, because you often might come in and try and change your swing because you want to try and, you know, hit better or you end up hitting worse. But then I think it's great that you can allow them just time to relax into their swing, hit a few balls, see what they're actually doing. But I really like the way that you build a sort of 5-6 week plan so that they can see what they're going to be doing. Because I think sometimes you can just kind of go and get lessons and somebody will go, well, okay, so what do you want to do? And it's like, well, I don't know. I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah. And I think being realistic in those lessons too, like we joke about it a bit, but before the lockdown, there's a guy I was seeing who we're just waiting to probably get our next lesson in now, but we only did one lesson. He came and I go, what do you want to do? And he's like, oh, I want to get 30 yards longer off the tee. I went, okay, that's great. That's a goal. Let's have a look. Hitting a few balls. Got like 20 minutes in and I just said, look, being realistic. Sorry, not because he couldn't, not because like, we could change equipment and stuff. He's just at their age now is you just got to get shorter. And I don't want to waste your time and say, oh yeah, definitely. We'll get you 30 yards longer off the tee. You'd be better off saying, hey, just play the tees further forward. And you're away. Cause he hit it so well. And I'm like, where am I going to find relatively like another, 30 yards in your swing? Like there's just no way. You just, unfortunately that's how it is. So yeah.
Yeah, and I guess on those sort of things, you could go, well, why do you want to get an extra 30 metres when if you play a little bit differently and shots a little bit differently, if that's what you're trying to do, you might get drop a shot or something like that, you know, drop an extra.
Yeah, my granddad, he just turned 80. And like I said, he took up golf when he retired. And I played golf with him on his 80th. We went out for a quick nine holes, which was really good fun. I haven't played golf with him in some time just because the dates don't really line up. I don't think he saw a single shot I hit because you can only see about 100 meters before it disappears. But it was great fun. But he played the white tees and he actually hits it like at Gulf Harbor like really good, but he's still hitting driver wood to get to a green.
Yeah.
And I was like, just like, who cares? Like, just play the reds. And like all of a sudden, because like you actually hit it good, you get a better representation of your game because you're hitting driver wood chip or you're hitting driver maybe iron on some of the holes.
Yeah.
And getting it to the hole. Like, you don't need to play the white tees or the black tees or the men's tees. It doesn't matter. Like, play the one that's relative for your distance.
Yeah.
So that sort of stuff's important when you're thinking about your lessons, especially as people get into club golf. You don't, because you see it on TV and they're playing a long course and they're talking about distance. They're only talking about 1% of the people out there.
Yeah, definitely. Interesting. Yeah. You got to remember that. So as a coach, once you've sort of got a nice plan in place, what's your expectation of a client? Sort of, so if you've got a 6-week plan and they're coming in to see you weekly, is would it be weekly or would they be seeing you fortnightly, or does it
depends what works for them. So if it's fortnightly, then that's fine too. It just turns into a 12-week plan. But I give in that plan, there's mobility stretches that they do at home. There's movement exercises that they do at home. And then there's incorporating some golf. So when they go to the range, what do they do? When they go chipping green, what do they do? And mainly because that when they're at home, like people don't have like the whole week, they can't go to the driving range every day of the week. So stretches and mobility exercises that they can do at home will really improve their golf.
Yeah.
And we all get in the habit of sitting in cars, sitting in chairs, sitting on the computer, couch. We're not using our muscles properly. And then all of a sudden you turn up on a Saturday and you got to play golf and you need your back to engage. And all you've done is sit down for a whole week at the computer. So that's probably a big part, is making sure they do those at home. My expectation is when they do come to the lesson is that they're honest with me. They haven't practiced. Just say you haven't practiced.
Because you can tell you haven't practiced. Yeah.
And some have. Some have gone, hey, look, I was real busy last week. I didn't go out at all. And I've gone, okay, well, let's hit a few balls. They hit some. And I'm like, okay, we're kind of still where we are. So you're here now. I won't count this as a lesson. I'll go. And you just do your practice. Because what am I going to teach you? Well, it's the same thing as I teach you the past week.
Right.
So bits and pieces like that, as long as they let me know. And yeah, if they stick with the program, I think any coach out there could say that if they stick with what they've asked them to do, they can guarantee they'll get better. It's just understanding how much better people will get, because golf's really weird, right? You're shooting 90, but you play 3 or 4 shots better. And that's got to be an improvement worth the hours and times that you put in. So, yeah, that's really it.
Nice. I like your plan. I like how you've laid it out. And, yeah, I think I really like that.
That's good.
Right. So I want to talk about ladies' golf. What sort of woman participation, or woman, how many members do you have as a sort of a ratio, like men to women? How many more men play than women?
Yeah, it's quite a big number here at Gulf Harbor. Like we don't have that, so we've actually got quite a few women. I don't know the numbers exactly off the top of my head. It'd be 25%, I guess, would be a good percentage. I can't tell you that number exactly. Yeah, but we don't have a we've never had dedicated men's and women's times. So that's been a real big part, because one, I just don't see it very, like, who cares? Like, most of the time, if the ladies want to play together, do they want to play together at 10 o'clock? Well, no, some want to sleep in, and I understand that. I want to sleep in. I'm happy being off at 1 o'clock. Like, yeah. So I never saw the point of having dedicated men's and women's times. So we've got a mixed field and mixed tournaments that run every week. So there's probably more women in the field than what I realize that are out there. So it's kind of hard to put an exact, I could probably look it up, but I think it's about 25%.
probably be across most golf courses, I guess, wouldn't there? Because I think out of the everybody that plays, I think there's about 25-30% are women and growing, which is great. But you'd probably find they'd be scattered across that.
So we've got like a woman, like it's grown a lot. In 2016, we didn't have any chance of having like a women's pennants team here at all. It was a very low number of women that played, and probably most of our women were just like a couple of nine-hole ladies that would have made up most of our women's field. Now we've got a pretty good age demographic too. There's some women who are playing golf here, either 9 or 18 holes with their partners, sort of between 30 and 50, which is nice to see their younger age group there too.
Yeah.
So that's good, and see them playing on Saturdays, playing on the weekends. So that's growing. That would be the area we kind of try focus on for the women a lot. And then our women who are here, who have been members for a while, it's just making sure that there's competitions and specific stuff for them, not just all the mixed stuff, like because we do some specific men's competitions. But since we didn't have that many women back then in 2016, sort of through that period, none of those competitions really exist, so we don't really have a history of competitions. We've introduced a few new ones recently. We did a mixed foursomes tournament, like most clubs do, and that got a lot more women into our fields last year. So that was cool to see, just them playing out there. We had 42 couples playing that as a match play event that ran over quite some weeks. So yeah, they're out there and playing, but not sort of the competitive side, more the social side for our club.
Right, nice. So you've got a Friday night ladies events that you have, so you did it. How long has that been running for?
So we started a men's Friday night league four years ago. And then we introduced a ladies section to it because some of the ladies would turn up and play in the guys in the men's Friday night league. We didn't care. Like if the ladies wanted to come and play, we said, yeah, sweet, come on. I mean, it's two-person Ambrose, no one cares. The only reason we did it around the men's, it was called Men's Friday Night League, is because the money from that went to the Movember Foundation. So right. it was fundraising for that. So the next year we introduced a women's section to it. And what we did is that the woman would go off 1-9 and the men would go off the other 9. They'd play the tournament and then meet up at the end.
Right.
And it's an incredibly social event. It's two-person Ambrose. You play in groups of 6. And, yeah, just who cares? Just go for it. One of my mates who came and played with me, he'd never been on a golf course before. That's how raw of a player we were getting out there. And our only rules is that you've got to use 3 tee shots of each person. So he missed a few golf balls, and I had to play it again from the tee anyway. But same thing with the ladies. We had some better ladies who were out there playing on Friday night afternoon. And they would go out with other ladies who are brand spanking new to golf. And some of those ladies now who were completely brand new to golf a year and a half later are still playing and actually playing in the club. So they jumped in for the social side. They're still part of the club for the social side, but they've picked up golf along the way.
Which is great, isn't it? I mean, that's what we're trying to encourage, is just that, you know, give it a go. And if hopefully they like it and join up.
Yeah, so this year I've got some pretty big plans on how I sort of want to run it. And I'll sort of keep those to myself because they're all very big trade secrets, I'm sure. But there's a couple of other things I want to introduce, which is actually just the women's coaching session that's open, like on the weekends sometimes. So just working out how we get to do that, but essentially just making it, you don't need a book, and we'll dedicate somebody out there for like an hour and a half, and you can come anytime during that hour and a half. So if you come at the end of the hour and a half, it's just one pro hanging out, gives you a few tips, you buy a few range balls, and then go for it. And that will hopefully just get our local community, some of the women that want to come up and they're more comfortable in their environment, they'll come up and do that then. And then we'll have a mixed one and a men's one as well that all run throughout the days and so forth. And as long as those options are there, I think everyone will actually start to get into golf because hitting balls is fun.
Yeah. So is that open to just Golf Harbour members? Is that open to anybody?
Yeah, so they'll be open to anybody. That will come out eventually once we sort of get to a stage that we can do that.
Sure.
But yeah, that's one I really want to push this summer. The scheduling, the golf and the Friday night league is great. It doesn't It doesn't really work for everybody. It takes up a very good chunk of time. It's late in the Friday afternoon. There's a lot of other golf rules you have to learn, where just hitting golf balls is just hitting golf balls.
Yeah.
And I reckon if we can get them over that first hurdle, like even if you have somebody come to that class, they leave, and then they come back on their own right because they want to hit some golf balls, I'll consider it a success. So
definitely, definitely. So for those, for that idea that you, you know, you want to look at putting in plan, what about those people that don't have golf clubs?
So yeah, we've got retail rental options here. We've got a bunch of really old clubs that the golf club bought like 22 years ago when it first opened.
Wow.
There's hundreds of them, like, because they used to have so many visitors here. So we've actually been selling those off at $10 a club each. So they're not that great of a golf club, but it gets people started, and that way they've got their own club. So then they don't have to come and borrow one each time. They know what they can do.
Yeah.
And then we also sell package sets here, which is really important to have when you want to get someone started into golf, for as low as, I think, like $600 for a full set.
Wow.
Right up to like a premium sort of price of about $1,500 for a full set. And it just comes down to weight and graphite on steel and things like that. But when you get a putter, a wedge, a bag, a driver, and you get a standard setup, the value of a package set is just phenomenal to get people into golf. Because I think we, as pros or as shop staff, I feel we overcomplicate things a lot sometimes when you get someone new into golf. And it's more like, you just want to give them a secondhand club or a package set and just go hit balls and then come back and talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I really like that idea. So the Friday nights as well for the ladies that you plan on trying to do, is that open to anybody as well?
Yep, that's open for everybody too. So we just have a members price and we just have a visitor price that goes out there, and that's really it. You can turn up alone, you can turn up with somebody, it doesn't matter. For us, we always make up the tee times. Like, it's a shotgunish start. It's the most, uncontrolled, controlled golfing event you'll ever go to. Yeah, everyone turns up at the same time because they've all finished work. And then you got to pair everyone up and then you ship them off. And it's a bit manic, but that's part of the fun. So,
yeah. Absolutely. That sounds really good. And I think it's a nice way just to try and bring everybody together. You know, especially on a Friday night, you might just sort of had a few balls or release a bit of tension and meet people and have a glass of wine or something, right?
Yeah, we get through a few more than a glass of wine and all of them there. But that's what it's about. It's the golf secondary. The golf is so secondary when we've ended up doing them. And even the prize givings and stuff are just like, they're not serious at all. So like the prize givings I remember doing from last year, sometimes we even got like the people who were playing in the event, you'd have a few characters, you'd be like, do you want to actually do the prize giving?
Yeah.
And they'd get up in front of everyone and give it a try. And like, that's all it is. It's just a bit of a laugh. Like, yeah, no one cares who wins. Like, we basically do a first prize and then we do three lucky draws and that's it. We only reward first and that's it.
Yeah, and I think it's, a big part, like you say, of the game is that social side. It's bringing people together into a community and a relaxed environment and giving them opportunities.
Yeah, I think everyone gets tied up with actually their score and having to play golf. And there's the smallest amount of percentage of people in the world that actually like need to keep a score or care to keep a score. I think it's quite humbling, like, to actually keep a score because, like, God, when you watch it on TV and then you go and try to do it yourself, and even for someone like me, I'll go, like, how are they so good? Like, it's frustrating. It doesn't – I do it still now for the social side and for the community and for the people instead. And, that's all it needs to be.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'll wrap it up, Fraser. So – tell me, what is your favourite golf course?
Like Gulf Harbour. Yep, definitely. I'm a bit biased because I work at, my favourite golf course actually is Kinloch Golf Club.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. I've never shot a good score there in my life. It doesn't have the best views in New Zealand for golf courses. It's just really hard. Like, and it's a fun hard for me. I did a members trip down there and we played it And for our members, it's hard. Like, it's not as fun for them to go and play. Like, you've got to be able to actually kind of carry the ball like 150 meters and have some relative control of where it goes.
Yeah.
And then it's quite fun. But that'd be my favorite. I think best score I've had there's like 78, and I feel like I played the best round of golf of my life when I finally shot there.
And what, is it a 71?
72 course. But yeah, it's just hard. There's like a par, I can't remember right now, the par three number like 13, 14 that's out there. And it's like hitting it to a postage stamp, and I have to hit like hybrid or five wood to get it there. It usually plays into the wind. And if you miss it left, you've got like to hit it up two stories to try get it to the green. You can't see the green.
Right.
You might as well just pick up and just go to the next hole. It's near impossible. But I really enjoy that because I'm not, again, doing it for just playing with the people and taking shot by shot. I'm not really too concerned about the overall score during that time. So, yeah, that'd be my favourite course.
Okay. And what about your favourite golf club that you have in your bag?
Oh, favourite golf club in the bag. I'd have to say, like, my putter is my favorite, but that's a really boring answer. I love putting so much, and I spend a lot of time putting. It is definitely my favorite club in my bag. But my actual favorite golf club is I've got a Hobner 3-iron. It's got a 100-gram graphite extra stiff shaft in it. It's like 17 degrees. So it's like a driving iron, essentially.
Okay.
And yeah, it looks a bit weird when people see it. They kind of go, wow, I've never seen something like that. But it's such a nice iron to hit. And I can hit it really low, like little stinger shots, which I love hitting and playing around with. So, yeah, that'd be my actual favorite golf club to hit would be that little 3-iron. I'm useless with it like 30% of the time, but it's fun.
Cool. And what about your favorite? What sort of golf ball are you playing with at the moment?
So I play the Pro V1 X. Okay. The red number Pro V, and they came out with the alignment lines on it now, so it's got the two lines either side. So I play that one. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. And what about your favorite quote?
Oof.
Golf quote. It can be any quote.
Oh, any quote. Yeah. Got like so many that you sort of spend the time sort of looking through. Jeepers. No, I've got a favorite one. We can cut all this time out that I spend thinking. Give me some time to look one up on Google quickly that's relative to me. I don't know. I can't remember who said it. I did actually study it to a bit. This would be many years ago, but I quite like the quote of, the longer you stare into the abyss will take time to stare back at you.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why that sits with me. That's one that I've always sort of just thought about just quite regularly, and especially when you get like a little bit sort of low in either your golf or in like your life, you just kind of think about it and think about where you're at, and then I take one step at a time and you just keep moving on. So yeah, which is important, especially right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Right. All right, Fraser. Well, look, I really appreciate your time and you know, being here. It's been really informative, just finding out a little bit more about you and the way that you coach and some of the things that you've got available coming up at Golf Harbour. So thanks for your time.
No, thank you very much.
And so just quickly, if anybody wants to get hold of you, how do they do that?
Well, since you brought up my LinkedIn profile, I'm going to say that, but it really needs an update. So LinkedIn or Instagram, Facebook, you can find me on Kiwi Golf Club or at Golf Harbour Country Club.
Yeah, so Kiwi Golf Club, is that something that you've set up so people can actually buy an affiliate membership through that as well, right? Because there's a few of them around. You can do a She Loves Golf, you can do Golf Warehouse, and so we've got Kiwi Golf.
Yeah, Kiwi Golf Club. So, yeah, we do an affiliated pack there, and that's mainly just to make sure we get people a handicap so they stop being burglars out there on the golf course. But we've got some really good sponsors who are behind it. So even though our pack, I think, is $200, I might be wrong there, hopefully about $200, you probably get about $170 back in like value of merchandise with your membership there too. And that's like a good starter pack, especially if you're if you're new to golf, like you get balls, tees, some chewing gum, some bits, pieces like that. So yeah, lots of stuff in there. Yeah.
Come for the golf course.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. All right. I will look into that as well. But yeah, so thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay.
So as always, we've loved connecting with you here at the Golf Community, a beginner's guide to golf. We appreciate your support, so love us and like us, subscribe and connect using the links below. And as always, we would love to share your story, so contact me and let's get you on an upcoming episode. So as always, from the golf community, ka kite anō.